I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
The Supreme Court has abdicated its duty to give guidance to the lower court and really to establish, as I say, justice for these innocent children. It is really disgraceful.
A pro-life attorney blasts the U.S. Supreme Court for declining to hear a case challenging abortion buffer zone laws in one Illinois city. The moves the city made to avoid constitutional review and what the plaintiff has to say.
Planned Parenthood took advantage of it and began taking the life of an innocent baby immediately the next day.
A judge lifts health and safety regulations for abortion clinics in Missouri. And now the once pro-life state has resumed the deadly procedure.
How do we strategize? How do we coordinate our efforts? How do we mobilize together?
Plus, creating a unified front for the pro-life message, the new venture to change the culture of death to one that supports life.
The law is unconstitutional. It is a terrible imposition and infringement on the First Amendment rights of counselors all over the country.
Another blow to pro-life advocacy as the U.S. Supreme Court declines to hear a free speech challenge to buffer zone laws. Buffer zones restrict life ministers from coming within a certain distance of abortion clinics. In this case, the city of Carbondale, Illinois, criminalized counseling within 100 feet of abortion facilities and criminalized approaching a person within 8 feet without their consent for the purpose of education, protest, or counseling. The Thomas More Society filed the lawsuit on behalf of the sidewalk counseling organization Coalition Life. Lower courts upheld Carbondale's buffer zone laws under a previous Supreme Court decision, which found a similar law did not violate the First Amendment. On the eve of the Supreme Court's deadline on the Carbondale case, the city repealed the buffer zone law. Justices then declined to hear the case.
The reason they didn't hear it, in all likelihood, is in a midnight, weekend, secret basement kind of meeting, the city hastily repealed the ordinance, knowing that we were going to the Supreme Court on it. And apparently the tactic worked. The U.S. Supreme Court didn't have basically the courage of its own convictions to rule in a manner that they've already basically indicated would be the right way to rule. It's really a gross miscarriage of justice here.
To talk about the Supreme Court's refusal to hear his case is the executive director of Coalition Life, Brian Westbrook. Brian, thanks for being here with us today. As we just heard from your attorney, Stephen Crampton, at the Thomas More Society, the city of Carbondale repealed their buffer zone law just before it went to the Supreme Court. As of now, your counselors are free to provide mothers with a choice of life. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. They did this in a four-minute meeting at City Council. The public was not invited, but in 4 minutes, they recalled that ordinance, and we are now allowed to go out and educate women in front of these abortion facilities, and we're excited to continue to do that. However, there's a lot of far-reaching reasons why we took this to the Supreme Court.
Could you go into some of those?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Hill versus Colorado back in 2000 was wrongly decided, and Justice Thomas, in his dissenting opinion, specifically said that Hill was a distorted decision. Even in the Dobbs decision, they specifically call out Hill and say it was a distorted decision. And we know that if Carbondale can rescind or remove this ordinance in a four-minute meeting in the basement of City Hall, they can put it back in a four-minute meeting as well. So we're looking very closely at the city of Carbondale now that the Supreme Court has declined to hear the case, and very closely to make sure that they don't put this back in place to restrict our freedom of speech.
Now, Carbondale is just one of many cities in the U.S. that have similar laws. How have your sidewalk counselors worked around these laws, if at all?
Yeah, it's a bit of a dance, in fact, and we've had our attorneys advise us on how we can approach women and specifically provide that information. But again, it's with their consent. And so what that means exactly with regards to how the police enforce that, how the city council enforces that, it's always been up in the air. And so it has very much chilled our speech in Carbondale.
And can you tell us a little bit about Coalition Life's work in Carbondale and what your turnaround rate is for mothers who are going to get an abortion but instead choose life?
Yeah, since we started our ministry more than a decade ago, we've seen more than 4,300 turnarounds throughout our ministry. We started in St. Louis, but we're up in Chicago, Carbondale, also out in Kansas City, and we have about a 1% turnaround rate. So 100 people come in, about one of them will leave out of the 100 that we see, and it's a great opportunity to educate the public and especially educate women who are going there, especially to Carbondale from all these other southern states. They're going there, they're being flown there, they're getting on buses and trains and, of course, driving. They're coming from all over the states to Carbondale, and we're there at that moment that they're in the most need of help.
Well, Brian, I'm glad they have people like you there, as you said, in their hour of need. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
New buffer zone laws in Scotland are now being enforced, and a 74-year-old woman has become the first person to be arrested and charged under the country's new laws.
When the government banned this kind of form of free speech for pro-lifers at abortion facilities, they also banned the right for those there to hear and listen to information that was available to them. Rose wasn't trying to reproach people or tell them what to do or say anything unwarranted or uninvited. She was simply making herself available for a woman, if she so chose to do, to come and have a conversation.
Rose Doherty was silently praying outside a hospital that performs abortions with a sign that said, "Coercion is a crime. Here to talk only if you want." Scotland passed the Abortion Services Safe Access Zone law last year to prevent protesters or vigils within 656 feet of abortion clinics. Those who break the law could be fined up to €10,000 or more. Pro-life advocates say it may only get worse.
I guess what we're seeing is part of a wider trend towards censorship of pro-lifers. In the beginning, they said, this is just a small zone around the abortion clinic. You can protest anywhere else you want, just not by the abortion clinic. You know, this is a 200-meter zone, and the woman behind it is already saying, you know, or implying that it's not enough and that it needs to go further. And so I think what we're seeing is really quite frightening.
To Italy now, where in Tuscany, a region that includes major cities like Florence, Pisa, and Siena, has become the first Italian region to approve assisted suicide. The new law, approved on February 11th, does, however, allow doctors to refuse to participate on moral grounds. The head of the Tuscan Bishops Conference said the new law is not an achievement, rather a defeat for everyone, after urging lawmakers not to pass the bill. Meanwhile, Canada is marking the 10th anniversary of legalized assisted suicide. The country's medical aid and dying law was legalized in 2016 after the Canadian Supreme Court ruled that parts of the criminal code that prohibited assisted suicide were invalid. Canada's parliament legalized the medical aid and dying law, also known as MAID, for people whose deaths were reasonably foreseeable in 2016. In 2021, they expanded it to those with chronic conditions whose deaths were not imminent. The latest report on medical assistance in dying indicated more than 15,300 people died using assisted suicide in Canada in 2023. Since its legalization in 2016, more than 60,300 people have died through MAID. Physician-assisted suicide is being considered by lawmakers in the state of Illinois. State Senate Bill 9 would authorize a patient with a terminal disease to request that a doctor prescribe medication to allow the patient to end their life. Supporters say it would allow their loved ones to die peacefully. Critics have voiced concerns about vulnerable populations being targeted and the abuse of power. Abortions have resumed in Missouri after a judge temporarily blocked regulations that require abortion clinics to be licensed by the state. Missouri was home to some of the nation's strongest pro-life laws, protecting the unborn in all stages with limited exceptions of medical emergencies. However, in November of 2024, voters enshrined abortion into the Missouri state constitution with Amendment 3. Abortionists, however, say that state safety regulations were still preventing them from performing abortions and filed a lawsuit to remove the health standards. A Missouri county judge blocked the safety regulations while the lawsuit plays out.
It's unheard of that any medical facility would not have some kind of boundaries or accountability.
Republican lawmakers in Missouri are working on bills to repeal and replace Amendment 3 and put the vote before the people again.
We cannot sit back and do nothing. We have to take action. There has been a wrong perpetrated on Missouri, and we need to make this wrong right. And we are attempting to, our goal is to go back before the voters and allow them the opportunity to weigh in on the life issue. And I am confident that this is going to be successful.
We have an update to a story we brought you earlier this month. A Texas judge has ordered New York-based Dr. Maggie Carpenter to pay a $100,000 fine for prescribing abortion pills to a woman near Dallas. State District Judge Brian Gantz also issued an injunction barring the New York-based doctor from prescribing abortion medication to Texas residents. Gantz noted in his order that despite being notified, Carpenter failed to appear in court. The ruling was handed down on the same day New York Governor Kathy Hochul rejected the state of Louisiana's request to extradite Dr. Carpenter, who was criminally charged with prescribing abortion pills to a pregnant minor in Louisiana.
And I will not be signing an extradition order that came from the governor of Louisiana. Not now, not ever. I want to be very clear on that.
There's only one right answer in this situation, and it's that that doctor must face extradition to Louisiana, where she can stand trial and justice will be served. We owe that to the minor and to the instant loss of life and to the people of this state who stand by life overwhelmingly.
The battle between New York and Louisiana over Dr. Carpenter is expected to result in a court case that could test New York's Shield Law, which protects doctors who prescribe the abortion pill to pro-life states.
Fertilization, I've been saying that we're going to do what we have to do, and I think the women and families, husbands, are very appreciative of it.
President Donald Trump has signed an executive order to expand access and reduce costs of in vitro fertilization, or IVF. Signed on February 18th, the order says, in part, infertility struggles can make conception difficult, turning what should be a joyful experience into an emotional and financial struggle. The order will aggressively reduce out-of-pocket and health plan costs for IVF treatment within 90 days. The Catechism of the Catholic Church states that IVF is morally unacceptable because it separates the marriage act from creation and establishes the domination of technology over human life. In response, the USCCB released a statement saying, "As pastors, we see the suffering of so many couples experiencing infertility and know their deep desire to have children is both good and admirable. Yet the administration's push for IVF, which ends countless human lives and treats persons like property, cannot be the answer. We look forward to working with the administration to expand support for restorative reproduction medicine that can help ethically treat often overlooked root causes of infertility." Newly confirmed U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says that President Trump has asked him to study the safety of the abortion pill mifepristone. The Food and Drug Administration has relaxed its rules, allowing doctors to prescribe the deadly pills without doing in-person appointments and extending the time a woman can take it from 7 weeks to 10 weeks pregnant. The FDA's moves have been blasted by pro-life doctors as unsafe. As the Secretary of Health and Human Services, RFK Jr., says, he will hire pro-life doctors for the department. Prior to his confirmation, he told pro-life senators that he would oppose taxpayer funds for abortion domestically and abroad and restore conscience protections. During his confirmation hearing, the former presidential nominee called abortion a tragedy, stating that the U.S. cannot be a moral nation by having 1.2 million abortions per year, and how abortion should be controlled. Vice President J.D. Vance is reiterating his support for families. During the annual Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC, in Maryland late last week, the vice president was asked what the Trump administration will do to defend the unborn and support mothers and fathers that choose life. Let's take a listen.
We want to make it easier for young moms and young dads to choose life, to start families, and to bring new life into the world. That's the whole point of our policy. Now, some of that, of course, is supporting our great crisis pregnancy centers at the moment of these important healthcare decisions, encouraging young women to choose life at that important moment of choice. Some of that is bringing costs down so that, you know, young moms and dads don't look to the future and a new baby and say, how can I afford this? And if they're able to actually afford to raise a family, maybe they'll start thinking of babies as the blessings that we all know that they are.
A baby's heartbeat is the center of a lawsuit before the South Carolina Supreme Court. Currently, South Carolina bans abortions when a baby's heartbeat is detected, around 6 weeks. But Planned Parenthood argues that six weeks does not align with science and wants it expanded to 9 or 10 weeks. This is the third time Planned Parenthood has sued the state over the heartbeat law. The court will likely take several months to decide this case. In the meantime, protections for life after 6 weeks will likely remain in place. The state of Arkansas is investing $45 million to improve maternal health in the state. Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders signed the Healthy Moms and Healthy Babies Act into law last week, which offers up to 14 paid visits for prenatal and postnatal care. It establishes pregnancy-related Medicaid coverage for remote ultrasounds, blood pressure monitoring, and glucose monitoring. It also offers reimbursement offers for trained professionals and community health workers that provide emotional, physical, and informational support to women giving birth. Arkansas faces one of the highest maternal mortality rates in the U.S. 60% of the counties in the state have limited to no maternity care. A new pro-life organization is launching to develop new strategies to fight pro-abortion sentiment, both legislatively and culturally. The Life Leadership Conference will be a hub for the exchange of information and ideas to help pro-life organizations adapt to the altered landscape of fighting for the preborn. The conference is accompanied by the creation of a $30 million pro-life venture fund to spend on member projects to reduce the number of unborn children killed by abortion. The new coalition will be led by a well-respected leader in the pro-life movement, David B. Wright, who joins us now to discuss his hopes for this new venture. David, why did you think it was necessary to build this conference, and what stage is it in right now?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on and for this opportunity to share the good news of what is happening in the pro-life movement right now. Particularly since the Dobbs decision reversed Roe versus Wade just 2.5 years ago, we have seen the Supreme Court send the decision about abortion back to you and me, the American people, through our elected officials in the states and in Congress. And so we've had this seismic shift in the landscape of the pro-life movement to where today we have 50 unique state-by-state battles. And regrettably, in this post-Roe landscape, we still see abortions numbering well over 1 million per year, children dying, women being wounded. We see people flooding across state borders from pro-life states to pro-abortion states. We see the proliferation of abortion pills. And in the midst of this, we can't keep operating as a movement in the pre-Dobbs world. We have to really focus on how do we operate in this new landscape. And it's important to recognize that we have this beautiful tapestry of the organic growth of all of these independent pro-life organizations and leaders and efforts. But when we don't work together, it actually dilutes our overall impact. And so in this post-Roe climate, it's more important than ever before that we strategically coordinate. And so the Life Leadership Conference was formed out of the desire of many national and state pro-life leaders to say, how do we work together more cohesively? How do we strategize? How do we coordinate our efforts? How do we mobilize together? How do we identify the messaging that will work in different situations? And how do we fund and develop these efforts so they can achieve greater impact. And so that's where the Pro-Life Venture Fund, the $30 million, was pulled together by philanthropists to say, if we can leverage the entirety of the pro-life movement working together, we can achieve so much more than if we work independently. I could not be more excited. After 20 plus years of working on the front lines in the pro-life movement, this is a project that has been needed for decades, and I'm so excited to see it finally happening.
It is exciting. And can you share where exactly will the money of this fund be going to?
Yes, so it's going to be two different things we're working on at this very moment. And we're in the very earliest stages of setting up the Life Leadership Conference and the Pro-Life Venture Fund, which probably will have far more than the initial $30 million because philanthropists are coming out of the woodwork saying, we want to get behind efforts that can drive the collective impact of the entire pro-life movement. But initially, what we're trying to do is identify who will be at the table, the organizations that will be invited to be members of the Leadership Conference. We've been in conversations with many of the leading national organizations, many state organizations. I've been on phone calls and communicating with people over this last week since the news broke about this initiative. So identifying who are high impact organizations that are already achieving results, who, if given more resources, could achieve even greater impact. And so once we identify that, bringing them together, identifying key strategic initiatives, some of which will drive down the supply side of the abortion economic equation, and some of them will drive down the demand side, and other projects will focus specifically on culture shift. How do we shift public opinion? How do we change hearts and minds? And how do we bolster the capacity and the resources and the awareness around our pregnancy centers and maternity homes? So these are a few of the key projects that will be funded through this initial launch of the Life Leadership Conference and the Pro-Life Venture Fund. And we look forward to taking this as step one and seeing where it goes, what projects can be considered and developed and built out over the next few years.
And David, can you share any of the names of these organizations you've been speaking with?
We have spoken with just about all of the major players in the national organizations, but because we've not formalized the membership yet, I'm hesitant to say who has been in the conversations, but I will say just about the who's who of national pro-life leaders and many of the high-impact influencers that are driving the pro-life movement right now are going to be a part of this collaborative, and it is going to be exciting. So over the next few weeks, we'll be announcing the initial round of members as we forge this coalition together, and then we can't wait to launch some of these projects and get more victories on the board for the pro-life movement. We can't keep losing like we've been doing far too much since the Dobbs decision. 17 times abortion has been on state ballots. We've lost 14 of those times. We need to start winning more and more and working together with leaders, organizations, philanthropists, and advocates. I believe we can achieve unprecedented success and save more lives and impact more hearts and minds.
That's incredible, David. Is there anything else that you want to share with us before we let you go?
I would just say for the person who's watching us right now, please keep this effort in your prayers because certainly this is going to face spiritual attack. Trying to get all of these different facets of the movement working more cohesively together is a daunting challenge, but one that we recognize the time has come and the need is here for this to happen. And so I would ask for your prayers. And also, if you know people who lead pro-life efforts from local efforts in your parish, in your community, all the way up to national organizations, let them know about the development of this effort. And we would love to consider linking arms and partnering with all leaders, organizations, philanthropists, and advocates across the movement.
Thank you, David. We'll certainly keep you in our prayers.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, a maternity home on a college campus helps support mothers and promote life. Plus, working to change the standards of care in women's health. We speak with the founder of FEM, an organization that helps women optimize their health to reach their fertility goals. Reproductive health has come to the forefront of national conversations during and after the confirmation hearings of RFK Jr. as the new Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. Anna Halpine is the founder of World Youth Alliance and CEO of FEM, a comprehensive women's health and wellness program for optimal reproductive health. The natural and science-based program helps women learn more about their bodies and how to identify daily hormonal shifts to achieve their health and fertility goals. Anna Halpine sat down with EWTN's News' Montse Alvarado at SEEK 2025 in Salt Lake City, Utah, to discuss the origins of FEM and what women's health truly is.
FEM really started because we saw that despite all of the discussion about women's health, very little women's health care is actually available. We know that it's time to change the standard of care. Women deserve to be able to receive a diagnosis and treatment of the root cause instead of just Band-Aids for ongoing symptoms. And we also saw that we really have the science, the knowledge, and the clinical care to be able to bring this information to women, empower them to understand their own bodies, to know what's healthy and normal, and to have the freedom and access to healthcare and information that they need to make the choices they want. Women's health is about the whole woman and her body. One of the things we hear from women all the time is, I have this symptom, I have that symptom, I've gone to 8 specialists, I'm running around, but it seems like my body is a unity. So women have this feeling that their body is a whole, and they want healthcare that addresses that. And the secret or the answer to that is really reproductive endocrinology. Reproductive endocrinology is just the science of hormones, which serve as a conduit through our whole bodies. The brain sends hormones as signals to every system of our body to tell it what to do. And so understanding that as a unifying principle really allows us to provide health care to women that answers their whole variety of needs. Healthcare cannot be just reduced to women's issues or specific reproductive or sexual issues. It needs to address the whole range of a woman's body, and reproductive endocrinology, or the knowledge of hormones, allows us to help her and her provider to understand what's going on and understand what's needed.
Franciscan University of Steubenville has opened a maternity home near its campus for pregnant students enrolled at FUS. The Guadalupe House, as it's called, is designed to provide a faith-filled environment to student moms as they continue their education at Franciscan. These mothers can also receive material assistance ranging from diapers, baby clothing, and nursery furniture to the support of an on-site residence coordinator. Franciscan University of Steubenville is one of several Catholic colleges in the United States to not only offer pregnancy support, but also provide a maternity home for students. The annual National Catholic Prayer Breakfast will take place this Friday in Washington, D.C., and you can get a front row seat. EWTN will bring you full coverage of this 2-hour event starting at 9 a.m. Eastern. You will get to listen to all of the speakers, including a special address by Vice President J.D. Vance, and hear from our special guests, including Representative Chris Smith of New Jersey, who will be receiving a special award at the breakfast. Be sure to tune in at 9 a.m. for our exclusive coverage. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, ewtn.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.